Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. When Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev signed the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty in 1987, Europe breathed a sigh of relief. The deal took almost 3,000 nuclear missiles that were pointed at the continent mere minutes from launch to mushroom cloud, took those off the map. But for the past several years, many observers say Russia has violated the historic Cold War Pact. Meanwhile, China is militarizing parts of the South China Sea. Two reasons why the Trump administration says it's pulling the U.S. out of the INF treaty, signaling a further hardening of America's nuclear posture and a potential acceleration of the nuclear arms race. This hour on Point, the U.S., Russia, and medium-range nuclear weapons. And you can join us. When the president threatens a new nuclear arms race, do you think he's bluffing, or is he doing what needs to be done? If Russia is modernizing its arsenal and China beefing up its weapons, how should the U.S. respond? And what happened to the hope that humanity would step back from the brink, that we'd do everything to try to ratchet down the proliferation of the most destructive weapons of mass destruction ever created? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we're going to start today first with some analysis of a meeting that White House National Security Advisor John Bolton had in Moscow on Monday and yesterday. He went there to tell the Russian government face-to-face why the U.S. wants to leave the INF treaty, so we'll start today in Russia. Anton Troyanovsky joins us. He's the bureau chief in Moscow for The Washington Post, and we've got links to his reporting at onpointradio.org. Anton, welcome to On Point.
Hello. Nice to be here, Meghna.
It's good to have you. So first of all, what can you tell us about the nature of the conversation between John Bolton and Russian officials about the U.S. saying it wants to pull out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty?
So John Bolton had two very extensive days of meetings here, really quite remarkable. He met basically everyone who counts in the Russian security establishment, from Defense Minister Shoigu to his counterpart Nikolai Patrushev to, of course, Vladimir Putin himself on Tuesday. They covered a range of issues, Syria, terrorism, North Korea. But as you point out, the American withdrawal from the INF treaty was the headline topic. And there had been expectations coming into Bolton's trip that Trump's announcement that the U.S. was pulling out was a bluff or a negotiating tactic of some kind to bring Russia back into compliance. But Bolton, while saying the U.S. still hasn't formally withdrawn, was pretty much as clear as he could be in saying the U.S. does plan to withdraw.
Okay, so bringing Russia back into compliance, first of all, tell us a little bit more about that, because it was, what, back in 2014 in the Obama administration, right, that at least the Obama administration began talking about Russia violating the INF.
Exactly. So the INF treaty obviously bans nuclear-tipped ground-launched missiles that travel, have a range shorter than 5,500 kilometers, so about 3,000 miles. And Russia, according to the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and American allies in Europe, does in fact have such a missile in development. It just classifies it differently. So while Russia insists it is in compliance, there is a pretty firm agreement in the West that Russia is violating the treaty. So the question has been what to do about that violation. And John Bolton's point in a news conference here in Moscow yesterday was, well, Russia says it's compliant, so how can we bring them into compliance with a treaty that they say they are already compliant with?
Right.
So that was his point as to why the U.S. needs to pull out.
Well, let's hear a little bit from that press conference yesterday. Here is National Security Advisor John Bolton in Moscow saying that he believes that the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty has become obsolete.
It's important first to look at the reality that the treaty was outmoded, being violated, and being ignored by other countries. So under that view, exactly one country was constrained by the INF treaty, the United States.
National Security Advisor John Bolton there. Well, at the start of Bolton's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, Putin actually complained that he sees this as continuation of U.S. aggression, an aggression he sees that coming towards Russia, in Putin's view, for no reason. Here's Vladimir Putin.
Frankly speaking, I am quite surprised to see steps undertaken by the United States, which are not substantiated by anything, and I do not think that they can be called friendly.
Мы же даже практически не отвечаем ни на один ваш шаг. Нет, это все продолжается.
We basically don't even respond to any of your steps, but still it goes on and on.
Vladimir Putin there speaking through a translator. Anton Troyanovsky, how is it, or how do you think that the Trump administration, or specifically John Bolton, responds to hearing Vladimir Putin say, well, Russia isn't doing anything, isn't responding, but the U.S. goes on and on? I mean, we just talked about how the international community sees Russia as already being in violation of this treaty.
Well, in that clip that you played from Putin, he goes on to talk about the Great Seal of the United States and say that the eagle has 13 arrows in one claw and 13 olives in the other claw, and, you know, to symbolize the balance between force and peace. And Putin asked Bolton, so did your eagle eat all of the olives? To which Bolton responded, well, I didn't bring you any olives. So Bolton certainly tried to, you know, he tried to look tough and pragmatic, I would say. He, at that news conference I mentioned, he also talked about Russian meddling in U.S. elections and said pretty bluntly, don't mess with our elections. But he also obviously has a directive from the president, from President Trump, to look for areas of cooperation with Russia, which is something that came out of the Helsinki summit between Putin and Trump back in July. So while Bolton was here talking tough on the INF treaty, he was also underlining potential areas of cooperation.
Okay, interesting. So one more question for you, Anton, there. So what's the next step, though, regarding the United States pulling out of the INF? I understand that there could be a Trump-Putin summit coming up.
Absolutely. There is a Trump-Putin summit coming up. Both Putin and Bolton said that yesterday. It'll take place November 11th in Paris on the sidelines of the celebration of the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I, of the armistice. And you can expect, of course, Putin and Trump to continue the conversation on arms control, because while even if the INF treaty is in fact dead, there's still the New START treaty, which is an even more far-reaching agreement limiting nuclear arms. And then I would just add on, in terms of what happens going forward, this agreement, the demise of this agreement, is not necessarily all bad news for Russia. The Russian security establishment has been critical of the INF, saying it ties Russia's hands in responding to missiles being developed by countries on Russia's borders, including China. While Russia has been very critical openly, there's an argument to be made that this is not all bad news for Moscow.
Right. Well, Anton Troyanovsky, Moscow bureau chief for The Washington Post, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of what President Trump himself said about his decision or his desire to pull out of this nuclear treaty. On Monday, outside of the White House, he said the United States will build up its nuclear arsenal until other countries, not only Russia, but other nuclear powers, quote, come to their senses.
We have more money than anybody else by far. We'll build it up until they come to their senses. When they do, then we'll all be smart and we'll all stop. And by the way, not only stop, we'll reduce, which I would love to do. But right now, they have not adhered to the agreement.
Is that a threat to Vladimir Putin?
It's a threat to whoever you want, and it includes China, and it includes Russia, and it includes anybody else that wants to play that game. You can't do that. You can't play that game on me.
President Trump there on Monday. Well, joining us now is Joe Cirincione. He is president of Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. He's also former director for nonproliferation at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and he speaks to us today from Pittsburgh. Joe Cirincione, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, I just want to read a quote from you from Franklin Miller. He's a principal at the Scowcroft Group, a former Pentagon official, and he basically agrees entirely with the Trump administration's desire to pull out of the INF treaty because he says it just doesn't exist anymore, that the Russians have killed it by deliberate design. The Russian government cynically destroyed the INF treaty, and therefore all those people who say we have to continue to believe in the treaty also want you to believe in unicorns. What do you think?
Complete nonsense, hyperbole, masking a very dangerous acceleration of the nuclear arms race. You have to remember that when Ronald Reagan negotiated this treaty in 1987, a treaty that became the crowning achievement of his presidency, there were hundreds of nuclear-armed missiles being poured into Europe by the Soviet Union and the United States. It triggered the most massive demonstrations in European history. Millions of people took to the streets to protest these weapons. And Reagan and Gorbachev found a solution. They eliminated them. They destroyed them. Almost 3,000 brand new, perfectly functioning nuclear weapons were crushed in the few years after the treaty entered into force. That reality remains. Those weapons are not in Europe. This treaty is working. There isn't an arms race taking place in Europe right now.
But in order for
killing the treaty ends that pause in the arms race and inflames it again.
Okay. So, Joe Cirincione, we just got about 30 seconds here before the break, but I want to give you a crack at this next question, though. In order for a treaty to work, though, it has to have two parties or multiple parties acting in good faith.
Yes.
And the assertion is that Russia is not.
Russia's in technical violation, but this does not fix that violation. You kill the treaty, you remove your ability to correct the violation. You're giving Putin a free hand. It's appeasement, not strength.
All right. Well, I want to hear more from you when we come back from a break. You're listening to Joe Cirincione. He's president of Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. What do you make of the Trump administration's decision or desire to pull out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty with Russia? And what role does China have to play here? We'll talk about that in a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Trump administration signaling its desire to pull the U.S. out of the INF treaty. That's a Cold War-era treaty that limited or ended the use of medium-range or middle-range land-based nuclear missiles. And we're speaking today with Joe Cirincione. He's president of Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. And let's hear a little bit more from the president himself about why he wants to do this. Here's President Trump after a rally in Elko County, Nevada on Saturday, telling reporters that he's ready to pull out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or as we've been calling it, the INF Treaty.
We'll have to develop those weapons. Unless Russia comes to us and China comes to us and they all come to us and they say, let's really get smart and let's none of us develop those weapons. But if Russia's doing it and if China's doing it and we're adhering to the agreement, that's unacceptable.
So President Donald Trump's there saying that maybe we can end proliferation if Russia, China, and the U.S. all come together and desire to stop it. Here's National Security Advisor John Bolton during a press conference in Moscow yesterday where he met Russian President Vladimir Putin. And Bolton said there's just one point on which Russia and the U.S. agree, that other countries with nuclear arsenals in the world aren't restricted by the INF. It's a bilateral agreement between the United States and Russia, and that's a problem.
So there's a new strategic reality out there. This was a Cold War bilateral ballistic missile related treaty in a multipolar ballistic missile world. And I think on this latter point of the more complicated global strategic environment, this is something that concerns the Russians very substantially. And we talked about that.
Joe Cirincione, how do you react to what you just heard John Bolton say?
John Bolton is on a mission to kill all arms control agreements. He believes in a world of power and might, a world of U.S. dominance. He believes that these kinds of treaties restrict the military power of the United States. He wants a world where there are no restraints whatsoever on U.S. military freedom of action. He seems to have convinced Donald Trump to follow this course of action. The fear of our allies, the fear of many national security experts around the world, that is, if you take down this treaty, which is working, which is in place, which has restricted the arms race in Europe, then the next on his target list is the START treaty that had reduced the U.S. and Soviet arsenals, now Russian arsenals, by over 50%. And if you take, and that will then topple, that seems to be his goal. And then you put at risk the entire nonproliferation treaty regime. In other words, all of the rules of the road that Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives have built up over the last 40, 50 years would come tumbling down, and it's a dog-eat-dog nuclear world. Well, that is a road to instability and war.
So, I mean, we have seen, though, for at least a year now that America's nuclear arsenal, the Trump administration seeks for it to play a bigger role in the defense of the nation. I mean, I was looking at the most recent nuclear posture review, and it's and it talks about these exact risks of Russia, of China, of a non-bilateral world here, and that in order to counter these other countries that are enhancing and modernizing their nuclear arsenals, that the Pentagon and the National Security Council say, well, the United States must do the same thing. So I'm just wondering, right. I mean, earlier you were saying that stepping out or pulling out of the INF, though, you say America loses some leverage then over Russia? I didn't quite understand that.
Absolutely. Look, the first thing you do when you want to build new weapons is inflate the threat, is provide some justification for why you need even more than the thousands of nuclear weapons you already have. And in this case, Bolton is pulling out an old trick. He's using a technical violation to kill the whole treaty that he disagrees with for ideological grounds. What are we talking about here? We're talking about the Russians who have modified an existing weapon to give it greater range, a larger fuel tank, and they've put a few of them at one of their test sites in European Russia, and apparently in one other site. We're talking about a handful of weapons that are technically in violation, and we've been detecting this since about 2014. There are mechanisms for dealing with these kinds of violations. They happen frequently in arms control treaty. There are resolution measures. But instead of fixing it, instead of enforcing it, instead of going and insisting that they take those weapons down, he's killing the whole mechanism. If somebody breaks into your house, that's a violation of the laws against burglary. You don't repeal the burglary laws, you enforce them. By repealing this treaty, you're allowing Putin to do whatever he wants. Now there will be no restraint on him deploying weapons of whatever kind he wants in Europe. And here's the really bad part. It's unlikely that we can match it. Because for us to put these ground-based systems in Europe, we'd have to have a country that wants them.
Right.
But no European ally wants them. That's why you're seeing howls of complaint from France, from Germany, from the European Union, who warn that you're taking down, and these are their words, a pillar of European security. No one needs a new arms race, says the foreign minister of the European Union, among others. That's what they're afraid of, that Trump is inciting an arms race that was already brewing as both the U.S. and Russia are building other nuclear arms, and now they're afraid that Europe will once again be the battleground for these two nuclear giants as they battle.
Right. I mean, Europe is signaling as loudly as it can its discomfort with the possibility of an end to the INF treaty. I mean, I'm seeing here that Sigmar Gabriel, who just stepped down in March as German foreign minister this week, said that the demise of the INF threatens to, quote, again turn us in Central Europe and here in Germany into a venue of nuclear madness. I mean, we should recall that one time a million Germans marched against nuclear war weaponry in Europe, which is one of the things that led to the INF to begin with. Now, Joe Sorrentino, I know you have a lot more to say, but I want to welcome in one more voice into this conversation. Evelyn Farkas joins us now. She joins us today from Washington. She's a fellow at the Atlantic Council Future Europe Initiative, Eurasia Center, and the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security. She also served from 2012 to 2015 in the Obama administration as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia. Evelyn Farkas, welcome to you.
Thank you, Magna. Great to be here.
So I'm very eager to hear your take on this, given your experience here. Do you think the Trump administration is on the right track here in terms of its desire to pull out of the INF?
Well, Magna, unfortunately, I don't really see a better option right now because the Russians essentially put our back to the wall. This is really like going back to 1987 where actually our European allies, the Germans, asked us to step in and counter the Russian short-range or medium-range missiles that were deployed and threatening Europe at the time with our own missiles. So in that case, the Europeans wanted us to help them out, and President Reagan did so, but did so, I think, largely in a way that he was able to use it to negotiate the Russians out of their own missiles, and that's how we got the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. And I, having been in the administration, I know that we tried very hard to confront the Russians, to convince the Russians, to do what we could using words to deter them from continuing to violate the agreement. But they did not stop. As you noted in the beginning, this has been public since 2014. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff testified openly that the Russians have deployed this capability, these missiles. And so what are we going to do? I think that for the U.S. government, the best option, unfortunately, at this point is to do what we did in 87, which is to threaten to counter. Yeah. So the burglars burglared us. We then send another burglar outside of their house, have that burglar stand there and say, if you don't stop, we're going to send our burglar in. The problem is the way I think the Trump administration went about it. It doesn't sound like they consulted. It doesn't sound like they had a plan that included our NATO allies or the issue of how to deal with the Asian theater. Yeah. So that's the issue, I think, today.
Well, Evelyn Farkas, a couple quick questions here. You heard Joe Cirincione just a few minutes ago saying that he sees the way to counter the Russians is through the very instrument of the INF treaty itself, and that by deep sixing the treaty, you've lost what is perhaps the most effective mechanism to push back those intermediate range missiles that Russia, you know, as you said, we've been talking about since 2014.
But we were trying. I mean, we've been trying all along. The only option we had now was to press forward with a more aggressive stance where we threatened to counter them force on force, if you will. So, yes, it is creating the specter of an arms race, and that is regrettable. I agree with Joe there completely. But I would say that at this point, we don't have another option if we wish to get the Russians to stop with this missile development program.
Okay, so explain to me then a little bit more about what you were saying. Secondly, that the way this was announced or rolled out is problematic because is it not possible that given the relationship that the United States currently has with NATO or with even our European allies, that we couldn't even end up actually countering effectively these Russian the Russian intermediate range missiles, you know, burglars in your house and my house, as you were saying, because Europe doesn't want those missiles and we don't have good relations with them? So, I mean, how effective is this ultimate pulling out of the treaty going to be?
Well, our defense relationship with the Europeans is still solid. You know, Secretary Mattis works that relationship together with the NATO leadership and then obviously bilaterally. We already have a nuclear presence in Europe. Mm-hmm. We can obviously retaliate in various ways, and these intermediate missiles may not be necessary, even though, of course, they are threatening our allies. We have briefed our allies under the Obama administration, so it's not as if this is entirely new to them. But this approach, you know, walking away from the treaty, and given the personalities involved, you know, what Joe talked about earlier, is alarming to the Europeans. I think if it had been handled diplomatically differently, it might not have been as alarming to them.
I mean,
I do think they care about their security. Now, we do have two nuclear allies, the UK and France, and you know, obviously they're looking hard at this as well. But I think the biggest issue is the approach and the lack of a plan, from what I can tell.
Right. And I mean, I think you hear that reflected in the EU statements on this week, right? Their foreign policy arm said that it expects Russia to address the violations of the INF, but it also expects the United States to consider the consequences of withdrawal. The quote here I'm seeing is, "The world does not need a new arms race that would benefit no one, and on the contrary, would bring even more instability." Joe Cirincione, what's your response to what you're hearing from Evelyn Farkas?
I think the Obama administration failed to get the Russians to correct this violation. I think we have to keep this in perspective, though. This is not a significant military threat. We're talking about a few nuclear weapons. In a world where there are thousands of nuclear weapons, we have effective counters to them. The fact that we don't have our own particular type ground-based cruise missile doesn't mean we don't have sea-launched cruise missiles, air-launched cruise missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, sea-launched ballistic missiles, airdrop bombs. You know, we have more than enough. You don't want to get trapped into this illusion of a nuclear chess game where, because they have a particular piece on the board, you have to have that identical piece on the board. That's the logic of the arms race, and that's what we're afraid of, and particularly with the actors we're talking about. I don't want to hand John Bolton a new nuclear gun. I don't trust them to conduct the arms race in some reasonable, measured way. And there are alternatives. I think Evelyn's wrong. There are many alternatives. Let me tell you how Ronald Reagan handled a similar problem. Early in his first administration, we caught the Soviets cheating on a radar system that violated a different treaty, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. It was clear that this was a violation. The Russians insisted it wasn't. We spent years trying to adjudicate this in the mechanisms that are established. It never stopped Reagan from continuing to negotiate with the Russians. In fact, he then got the INF treaty with the Russians in 1987, and at that point, Mikhail Gorbachev stopped construction of this violating radar, and in 1992, he dismantled it entirely. In other words, patience and strength and persistence and negotiations corrected the violation of that particular treaty and led to the biggest reductions in nuclear arms in human history.
Yeah.
That's why Ronald Reagan goes down as the greatest arms control president in history.
Well,
John Bolton could learn something from him.
Let me make some space here for Evelyn Farkas. Go ahead and respond.
Well, look, I think obviously we don't want a nuclear arms race. And as I said before, we do have means to retaliate. But I also think that we need to do a better job as a government. And I include my administration, the administration I served previously, at holding the Russians' feet to the fire when it comes to arms control agreements. And I think part of it is calling them out on INF. And, you know, again, I don't really want us to withdraw from this treaty, but I just don't see another way to solve the problem of the Russians being in violation. And ideally, what I would have liked is then to have step two, maybe not withdraw, but threaten to withdraw, which is essentially what we've done. We have not withdrawn yet.
Right.
So with threaten to withdraw and then open another round of discussions, either bilateral or call the Russians bluff. They've always said they want multilateral nuclear negotiations. And they meant the Chinese. So open it up and invite the Chinese and see what the Chinese do.
So
but that's not what we're doing.
Evelyn, to your point about multiple administrations and their responsibilities of holding Russia's feet to the fire, though, I mean, I'm seeing here, for example, Jeffrey Lewis. He's director of the East Asia Non-Proliferation Program at the James Martin Center for Non-Proliferation Studies. And he's put out a tweet that basically says withdrawing from the INF does the opposite of that. He says the problem with withdrawing is that we take the blame for Russia's violations and Russia gets to keep its missiles and watch NATO quarrel internally.
Right. I mean, again, I'm not saying that I am in favor of withdrawal, but we have to do something. The next move on the chessboard was ours. And we already foreshadowed that we might develop these intermediate nuclear missiles through our budget process and through testimony from the Department of Defense publicly. And again, I don't like the fact that we have announced we're going to withdraw, but we haven't actually withdrawn. And this might get the Russians' attention. And again, if you had a plan to couple this with serious negotiations, then it would make sense. And I think Joe and Jeff and others would support it as well.
Right. So, Joe, we've got about a minute and a half here before the break here. But I think Evelyn makes an important point that we should say the withdrawal is not official yet. The Trump administration has signaled its intent. Could that be exactly what Evelyn's saying, leverage to get the Russians to negotiate?
Right. Well, it could be. And that's why you see some of our allies and some Republican senators who oppose it, as Senator Bob Corker, the Republican chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Rand Paul, both are appalled by this move, and they're hoping to give Donald Trump an off-ramp. They're trying to suggest, Mr. President, very clever negotiating move. Now you've got Europe's attention. Now you've got Russia's attention. Now use the process that Evelyn suggests and use the 6 months after we give a formal notice of withdrawal. The withdrawal doesn't take place for 6 months. Use that time to negotiate a solution to this. So you see people trying to do this, and the fear is that this is not John Bolton's intent at all. He has he does not want to keep this treaty or strengthen this treaty. He wants to kill the entire arms control regime, and this is another step in his plan.
Well, you're listening to Joe Cirincione. He's president of Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. Evelyn Farkas also joins us today. She's a fellow at the Atlantic Council Future Europe Initiative. And when we come back from the break, we will take a lot of calls here because we are talking about the Trump administration's signaling of its desire to step away from or withdraw from an intermediate range nuclear treaty, a Cold War era treaty we signed with Russia. What effect would that have? And is it the best move now as Russia and China are enhancing and building up their arsenal? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the Trump administration's signaling of its desire to pull out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty that we signed with Russia in 1987 and what effect that might have. We're joined today by Evelyn Farkas. She's a fellow at the Atlantic Council Future Europe Initiative and also served from 2012 to 2015 in the Obama administration as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Russia, Ukraine, and Eurasia. Joe Cirincione joins us as well. He's president of Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. And Evelyn and Joe, if I may, we've had a lot of patient callers waiting, so let me just get to some of them right now. Calvin is calling from Charleston, Missouri. Calvin, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a former, military. I'm a veteran, 30 years old, African-American, and as far as the U.S. goes, as far as our military and our nuclear arms and basically all our arms, I think the way President Trump went about doing it is not necessarily the right way, but I do think he's doing the right thing. As your first guest said, about appeasement, we've become a nation of appeasement to a lot of people for too long, and a lot of things that President Trump has done has shown the world they know we can no longer take this role on the global stage, for instance. But instead of us being a nation that is, for like lack of better words, I think we've been asleep. And the military teaches it's best to stay on guard always, mm-hmm. because when you fall asleep, that's when the enemy usually attacks or breaks the rules like Russia is doing. I think he's doing the right thing. We can't be asleep on our watch. As far as our allies go, as far as our nation goes, we have to, you know, right now I feel like we're behind the eight ball and Russia is ahead.
Calvin, I'm taking back from you there, and thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Margaret, who's calling from Hayes, Virginia. Margaret, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I find the whole idea of pulling out of yet another nuclear treaty horrifying. And illogical to think that once we get out of it and we increase our production of nuclear weapons, this is going to make the world safer. We already have more than 7,000 nukes, I believe. And I don't see how the idea of increasing that number is going to make the world any safer. We have enough to destroy the world many times over already. It's only a boon, in my opinion, to the war industry.
Margaret, thank you so much for your call. Evelyn Farkas, how would you like to respond to Margaret?
Well, first to Calvin, if I could just quickly, I do agree that we need to be firm with our adversaries. And I guess my thinking with regard to this move is that it's a deterrent move and hopefully a move that will ultimately strengthen arms control, because I'm going to right now give the administration that chance. I'm not going to assume that John Bolton has the lead and we're going to tear up the treaty entirely and we're going to drop all nuclear talk. So I'm maybe a little bit giving them too much benefit of the doubt, but that's where I am. I do, however, disagree with President Trump's approach to the allies. And again, as I said before, we have to be more collaborative with our friends and firm vis-a-vis our enemies. Mm. With regard to Margaret's point, I agree. I mean, I do not think we should be wasting money on developing nuclear weapons that we don't need. And that's the whole point of being firm and standing up to the Russians and getting them to step back and think about what they're doing. Because this is also part of a bigger picture, which has to do with Russia's military doctrine, their over-reliance on nuclear weapons as part of their war strategy, which I think is highly alarming, and you could have a whole nother show on that.
Right. Joe Cirincione, let me turn back to you here, because, of course, we could also continue to spend the rest of the hour talking about Russia, and we will return to it. But China has been lurking here as a major part of why President Trump says he wants to pull out of the INF here. I mean, I'm seeing that part of the thinking is that, for example, that the U.S. is constrained by the INF and not able to deploy strategic weaponry in the Asia theater, as Evelyn pointed out earlier, because of this. And that's putting us, to use Calvin's term, behind the eight ball in Asia.
Right. You always have to be very careful when you hear people who want new nuclear weapons and the language they use. So John Bolton says, you know, an outmoded treaty, violation, ignored, we're constrained. And so, you know, it feeds into that feeling that we're the suckers and that other countries are stealing a march on us. As one of your callers pointed out, we have 6,550 nuclear weapons. That is about several hundred times more weapons than you need to destroy every human being on the face of the earth. We have plenty of nuclear weapons. And you don't want to fall into this trap of nuclear war planners who see this as some kind of board game where you have to match piece for piece. So on China, what they're talking about is that China, a land power, doesn't have much of a navy, doesn't have much of a air force that can reach beyond its borders. They have nuclear
weapons. For now.
Weapons. Yeah, okay, for now. They have nuclear weapons, about 200, 300 so nuclear weapons compared to our 7,000, and they're land-based, and they can reach targets like Japan, like Korea, like Guam, and like the United States. They have about 40 that could reach us. And we don't necessarily have those – we don't have those ground-based missiles that match their capability exactly, and that's what they mean by we're constrained. You know, we're, the treaty stops us from building those, but we have sea-based missiles that can reach them just – air-based weapons that can reach them just fine. We have strategic submarines that prowl the oceans that can reach them just fine. In other words, we have dozens of nuclear weapons that can hit them for every one that they have that can hit us. We don't need to match them. And here's the other underlying reality about this. There's nobody – no one of our allies want these weapons. Japan just yesterday said – that they do not want the U.S. to pull out of the INF Treaty. They don't. They're not looking for the U.S. to deploy nuclear weapons in Japan, which is one of the places you would need to deploy them if you want to match a weapon.
Well, Evelyn Farkas, I think the deeper one of the deepest points that Joe is making here, it's worthy of some discussion here, further discussion, because you know I think he's right that there is a sense when you hear certain members of the administration talk now that the United States is weaker than it actually is. I mean, what's your response to Joe's point that there is no need for land-based intermediate-range missiles when we have such an overpowering sea-based nuclear arsenal that we could use? No one wants us to use them, but that are there for U.S. strategic purposes in the Asia theater.
Well, I have to confess here, I'm not a military planner, so it's a little bit out of my league to say definitively that we don't need those weapons. I will say, however, that it is true that our president, and I wouldn't say members of his administration necessarily, but our president does speak of America as if we're a declining power, as if we're not the strongest military power on the globe right now, the strongest diplomatic power, at least potentially. We're squandering that every day. And of course, still the strongest economic power. So I do think it's worth bearing in mind that we do have the upper hand. And the reason the Russians are developing the capabilities that they're developing has to do with the fact that they can't go head to head with us or the Chinese. They have to develop asymmetric means. And I think the real issue here has to do with Russia's feeling of vulnerability, the lack of what they call strategic stability in our defense relationship, and their desire to do something to correct that. Mm-hmm. And I think this administration needs to sit down and have some real blunt conversations with the Russians about the state of our defense relationship, about the various dangerous asymmetric things the Russians are doing to try to get an edge on us, like developing missiles, not just these missiles, but other missiles, like their cyber capabilities, the fact that they have inserted bots or other cyber weapons into our energy grid that they could activate in time of war if necessary. Things like that are actually of greater concern to me personally, and I think should be the subject of serious discussion and then hopefully negotiation if the Russians are open to it.
Yeah. So let me just ask you a quick question before we move away from China entirely here. Because back in 2011, John Bolton wrote or co-authored an op-ed, in the Wall Street Journal. And at that time, in 2011, he was already arguing that the INF had become obsolete. But he said one option would be for the United States to expand the treaty to include the other members, say China, or withdraw. Now, subsequently, he dropped the expansion notion. But why isn't that still also a possibility?
Well, that's what they should have started out with. I mean, they shouldn't have said publicly that they're going to withdraw from the INF Treaty. They should have privately told the Russians. Now, maybe they did. And then they should have tried to open another round of negotiations before they started the clock going on withdrawal.
Yeah.
Because in order to get the support that you need from our European allies and from our Asian allies for whatever our next step will be, we need to show and we need to actually use our diplomatic efforts to try to make a better faith effort in this current administration to see whether the Russians will make a deal.
Yeah.
You know, I can say that we tried very hard under the Obama administration, but it's a new group of people. It's a new dynamic. And the Trump administration should have tried harder to engage in more quiet diplomacy than I believe they did before this point.
Well, let me just get one more call here before we run out of too much time. Nelson is calling from Pembroke Pines, Florida. You're on the air, Nelson.
Thank you. I just want to state that it gets a little first of all, I'm a Vietnam veteran, combat wounded. I'm 69 years old. It gets a little tiring to hear individuals who are supposed to be experts constantly blaming the United States for violations being made by the Russians and during the Reagan administration, the then Soviet Union. I am hearing exactly the same thing again. The fact that John Bolton is in Russia talking to the Russians is an indication that he is, in fact, negotiating. And I think that the criticism being given towards John Bolton and Donald Trump is absolutely misplaced and is not helpful to the situation.
Yeah.
The blame goes to the Russians and not to the United States. How about it? How about backing up our leadership
a little bit more
here?
Well, Nelson, thank you so much for your call. Let me turn to Joe Cirincione. Joe, give me a quick answer to that, because then there's one more question I want to ask to both you and Evelyn.
Let me tell you how the Europeans see this. I was at a meeting of national nuclear security experts yesterday, and we had a leader from the European Union there. And the European Union finds themselves trapped, she says, between an assertive Russia and an ally they no longer feel they can trust. After seeing the United States pull out of the climate accord, kill the Iran anti-nuclear deal, which was the crowning achievement of European diplomacy, and now pull out of this treaty that they consider, they realize that Europe's greatest ally is actively willing to harm Europeans in order to achieve its own objectives. So, yes, I am critical of John Bolton and Donald Trump for harming our national security interests by these inept, dangerous moves that are going to make the situation worse, not fix the violations that the Russians have committed, not push back against the Russians, but allow the Russians to do whatever they want while dividing our key international alliance.
Well, Evelyn and Joe, in the last couple of minutes that we have here, there's one more piece of tape I want to play for both of you, because I think, you know, we've been talking about what diplomatic options there are, if any, about these intermediate range nuclear missiles. And just last week, I might be helpful for us to see how Vladimir Putin himself, how he says he sees the United States right now. And just last week, he was a guest speaker, Putin was, at an annual gathering called the Valdai Discussion Club. And he faulted the U.S. for what he says is its longstanding habit of leaping into foreign adventures with no success plan. He called those a typical set of mistakes for an empire. And then Putin said he also sees the beginning of the decline of America's empire. And here's Putin speaking through an interpreter.
Luckily, this unipolarity, this monopoly is disappearing, is almost gone. I think it's very dangerous, including for the monopoly itself, because they're losing their guidelines, and you get the sense of impunity that you can do anything, and it's always dangerous, leading to hard consequences.
That's Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking last week. Evelyn Farkas, I get the sense from that tape and what Putin said overall here that he's almost watching the United States, even in the context of this INF question, with somewhat of a smirk, saying no matter what you do, America, it's not going to really matter because you're on the decline.
Well, Magna, first of all, none of this rhetoric from him is new. He's been, you know, rooting for the decline of the U.S. and the end of the unipolar world since he came to power in 2000, maybe even before that. Second, he has contributed to creating this impression that we're a weakening power by meddling in our elections and possibly helping President Trump become our president. I don't know whether that's the case, but certainly President Trump has then gone ahead and again described America as if we are in decline and as I said, quite unrealistically described America relative to Russia and other countries. So, of course, President Putin's happy because he has helped bring about the confusion and the fighting that we have internally within our country through his meddling in our elections, through the social media intervention that continues to this day, as our heads of intelligence recently informed us publicly. And unfortunately, our president seems to be on the same page with the Russian president. Quite often you hear them speaking in Helsinki and they're almost finishing each other's sentences, describing America, as I said before, in very unrealistic, I believe, terms.
Well, Evelyn, let me tell you, I can hear and feel your frustration completely. Joe Cirincione, we have 30 seconds left to go. Last thought goes to you.
This is what a nationalist foreign policy looks like. It's a policy that downplays our alliances, that disregards international laws and regimes that have been created over the years, that asserts U.S. preferences overall. It is dividing America from our closest allies, weakening us, This is what's causing our decline, not any external enemy.
Well, Russia certainly helped with its meddling and the interference in the 2016 election, I have to say. Joe Cirincione, president of the Plowshares Fund, a foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution. Joe, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Evelyn Farkas, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and a former Obama administration deputy assistant secretary of defense. Thank you so much for joining us, Evelyn.
Thank you, Magda.
And listeners, keep your thoughts and comments coming. As always, go to onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.